Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. Just to the east of us, you can find the wonders of historic Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley, and by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car is always worry-free. I'll be right back to introduce my guest, Congressman Bill Schuster, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. From Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Congressman Schuster, I'm delighted to have you with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy guy, especially when you come to Bedford. I just want to start with something that is not only in the news, but obviously on your mind, and that is the recent passage of this budget bill, which you did not vote for. I just need you to explain to me and the other civilian what is going on here. Why does the administration and the Congress see no danger in this debt?
You have a president of the United States and enough members of the United States Senate, particularly the Democrats in the Senate, not so much the Republicans, but you've got to get 60 votes in the Senate to get anything done, is they have their priority programs and they don't want to see them cut. But as a House Republican, I'm proud to say that our majority in the House over the last 4 years is we've actually cut spending. And that doesn't get reported out there because it doesn't get reported. I can be on Fox, my colleagues can be on TV and talk about it, but they don't talk about it. But this is the first time since the Korean War that in consecutive years we have cut spending in Washington, D.C. Now, not enough, but enough that it's making an impact. We need to step back and take a look across these different programs to find more spending cuts. But at the end of the day, you're not going to cut your way out of this deficit and these debts. You got to grow your way out of it. And we've had a president with Obamacare in particular, that has put great uncertainty out there for businesses, for individuals, and people aren't spending money. The economy has been growing it a little bit. It's anemic, the slowest growth since in a recession in modern time. And what we've got to do is more to encourage businesses and individuals to go out and spend their money. We do that by certainty. One of the things we did do, we passed that the omnibus, the funds of government, which I voted against for several reasons, which I'll get into later. But before that, we voted to extend these tax dip provisions in the bill. Everybody was saying that we cut over $6 billion in taxes. Well, it's not really accurate. What we did is allow the taxes to stay in place. What we did was stop a $600 billion increase in taxes. That's the appropriate way to look at it, but everybody wants to say that we cut taxes. We didn't cut them. We kept them in place, and that's going to give people certainty. The medical device tax, for instance, is going to allow these people that are innovating and developing these medical devices that are good for the health of America, they're going to get whacked on a tax. We stopped that from going forward. A research and development, bonus depreciation, things like that help advance new technologies that cause businesses to make investments that buy things that people in plants will be producing and creating jobs. Those are all important aspects of getting this economy growing. And the economy growing at 1.5% and 2% is not enough. It needs to be growing at 3.5% and 4% like it did in the 80s and in the early 90s. That's the way we get out of these deficits. Again, maintaining a control on the purse string and not spending too much is important. But we do have needs out there to spend. And the first and foremost responsibility of the federal government is national security. We have got to spend enough money on our military that we are able to protect our nation and protect our interests around the world. And we are not doing that. We're one of the smallest militaries since before World War II.
Congress is our guardian of our pocketbook, is it not? I mean, by statute or by the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Congress is the one who controls the money.
Absolutely.
So why can't Congress do its job today and do that?
Well, because we have split government. We control both houses today, but as I mentioned earlier, there are only 54 votes in the United States Senate. 54 votes doesn't get us a bill passed. You've got to get to 60, so they have to rely on six Democrats to get them to 60. The House, we've passed numerous pieces of legislation over and over again. Cutting spending, reducing, rolling back Obamacare, stopping bad policy like the waters of the United States. You name it, we've done it in the Republican-controlled House. The other thing is once you do get a bill, you've got to go through the President of the United States. The way our Constitution is set up is the President has to sign it. If he vetoes it, it has to come back and get a two-thirds majority in both the House and the Senate, and we certainly don't have the two-thirds majority in either House to be able to override a presidential veto. So what this really boils down to is come next year in November, we have got to elect a Republican president that's willing to say, okay, I'm willing to stand with the Republican-controlled House. Hopefully, we'll continue to control the Republican-controlled Senate and get those six Democrats we need. But it's a partnership. And it's not just Congress doing it, because we saw what happened when we shut the government down. It shut down for 17 days. It cost us $20 billion more, and we went right back to
open. So give us a little civics lesson. We're supposed to have three equal branches of government,
sure.
But it sounds like one of the branches is kind of unequal. And that is the executive. The executive pretty much can do what he wants.
No, I mean, well, sure, he can veto things. Right. Not if you have two-thirds vote in the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. We can override the president.
Right.
We have that ability. We just don't have the numbers to do it.
Yeah.
And in our political system, I mean, this is the way the Founding Fathers set it up, to have the House and the Senate having to work together
right.
to pass a legislation and then work with the administration, the executive branch, to have a final product.
But it seems to me that if the executive branch had more leadership skill, they would be able to do this better. Am I right about this?
I don't understand the question.
Well, for example, during Johnson's administration, they had a Congress and a Senate. Obviously, it was Democratic, but the Republicans had some say. And Johnson knew how to deal with people. It just seems to me that our present president doesn't know how to deal with anybody.
Well, I would agree that our president right. doesn't know how to. He doesn't deal with anybody,
yeah.
Even in his own party. He's aloof and separated from them. But Johnson, of course, obviously knew how to work the legislative process, but Johnson also had huge Democratic majorities. There were probably, during his time as president, he probably had veto-proof margins in the House and in the Senate. Used to be, I think in the 60s when they changed it, to get the cloture, which is that today is 60, it was 67. And I think they changed it then because they only had 60
Well, then
senators.
Let me use the example of
sure.
Ronald Reagan. Then Ronald Reagan had a
right.
Democratic Congress. He dealt with Tip O'Neill,
sure,
and they seemed to be able to do things.
Absolutely, and Ronald Reagan sat down and worked it out with Tip O'Neill.
Right.
And you know, Ronald Reagan didn't get everything he wanted. And
so, has anybody come from the White House and work out things with you?
Absolutely not. We get very little. Well, first, as Republicans, there's no contact, really, not especially not with me as a committee chairman.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with my Democratic colleagues on this highway bill we passed.
Right.
We had very little contact with the administration on it. We passed a bill that we wanted, and the president signed it.
Let me turn the highway bill a little bit. Kind of, this is your specialty along with the defense, but highways are something very visible to the average person.
Sure.
I mean, if you're driving down, well, maybe I-80 is the wrong example, but I-80 is a good example because it's a federal highway. And you could kind of see the health of the nation by driving down a highway like
sure.
that. So This is important, isn't it? Making sure these bridges and everything get fixed and worked. And
absolutely. For the safety of traveling public and traveling commerce, but also for the economy of the United States. From the beginning of this founding of this nation, the transportation system, there was a federal role, not for the federal government to do everything, but that the federal government to partner with the states and locals. And if you didn't have that federal role, you wouldn't have the canal system we had back in the 1800s. You wouldn't have the Transcontinental Railroad that we produced in the 1860s. You wouldn't have the interstate highway system that we have today if there wasn't that federal-state partnership, because this is a national system. And we saw before Eisenhower passed the interstate highway system and made it into law, you'd have some states building a four-lane highway and stopping at the state line because the other state didn't have the money. So again, there's still a federal role. What we try to do in this bill is push back more decision-making, more flexibility to the states to allow them to operate faster. But again, if you want to get from New Jersey to California, you've got to go through a number of states. And so there is a federal role to be had, but to get out of the way, to streamline that process is what we did in this bill.
And this bill also affects air travel, train travel. Right.
Well, not air travel.
Not air travel.
But
okay.
We did put in this bill, we passed in the House in the spring, a passenger rail reform bill. It's the most reforms ever passed in Amtrak. We are going to force them to operate more like a business. The idea is to get them off the subsidies that the federal government pays to them. There's only one line in the country that's profitable, and it's highly profitable. It's the Northeast Corridor from Washington through Baltimore and Philadelphia, New York, and Austin. They make a profit. Keep that profits there. And then let's figure out how to make these other lines profitable, or at least reduce the amount of government that the taxpayer is paying to them. Because I believe there is a need for passenger rail in this country, and it needs to be able to stand on its own two feet, but we're not going to get there overnight.
Well, as a rail fan, I'm a big rail fan. I love to ride the train. If the Pennsylvanian that goes between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia looked like the Metroliner, more people would get on it, wouldn't you think?
That's true. But you're absolutely true, but you still don't have that mass amount of people that live on the Northeast Corridor. I mean, you've got 19% of the U.S. population live between Washington and Boston.
So that's why it's a subsidy. Is there any hope of ever getting a rail run like that to be profitable? Because that looks like it's a pretty long stretch.
I think there are places in the country we can do that and get much better at it. You've got the line from Harrisburg to Philadelphia that the state and Amtrak invested millions of dollars into it. They're close to making
a profit.
It's
the best bargain in the
world.
What a fabulous service that is.
It's a great service. It's close to making a process. Ridership's up 70%. And quite frankly, I'm not sure they charge you enough on the line. You know, because everybody makes economic decisions. And if you decide you're going to drive from Harrisburg to Philadelphia, pay the tolls on the turnpike, pay for gas, wear and tear in your car, park in downtown Philadelphia, the headaches you eliminate by not driving, I think that value by getting on a train is more than the $39 or $40.
All I know is that you can go to New York for $80, you can go to Harrisburg for like $25 or $30.
Right. So exactly. And I think that there's an opportunity.
Don't mess that up, Congressman.
No. We don't. And it's got to be a balance.
Yeah.
But if it costs you $100 to go round trip in your car and it costs you $100 round trip in a train, you eliminate all of those headaches. You're more productive on the train. You can be on your cell phone, you can be on your computer, you can read, you do other things to be productive.
Our guest is Congressman Bill Schuster, and when we return, we're going to talk about things that have been in the news, such as ISIS and Guantanamo, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. All the way back to Ben Franklin, Americans have known that well-informed decisions save grief, time, and money. At Thomas, we believe it's our job to share everything we know to help you be well-informed about your transportation choices. You're going to save some grief by learning about prudent financing that works in your favor, not ours. You're going to save time with our Real Cash for Your Car policy that accurately determines your trade-in value. And you're going to save money with our upfront and transparent pricing. What's in it for us is more completely satisfied customers who return for their next car and refer their friends to us. Learn about all of our Thomas 7 Steps to Savings by visiting Thomas Subaru in Bedford now during the Subaru Share the Love event. You'll get a great car. Subaru will donate $250 to selected charities. And best of all, you'll be making a well-informed decision. We think Ben Franklin will be pleased. Thomas Subaru in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years.
This is Raymond Horner of the Bedford County Vietnam Veterans Association, and you are listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
At the turn of the 19th century, Bedford was a small but growing frontier town in the southwestern Alleghenies. The opening of the West had begun, and along with it were families eager to start a new life. Among them was Demetrius Gallitzin, an unassuming but dynamic Roman Catholic priest whose mission was to evangelize the region for the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Father Gallitzin was eager to form a new church in this bustling town called Bedford. With the assistance of some willing Catholics, in 1816 he established a new parish called St. Thomas the Apostle. The new church on East Street at the end of the borough was small but functional. Years and two more church buildings later, St. Thomas the Apostle would grow to a major moral and community force in Bedford. Next May, St. Thomas the Apostle celebrates 200 years of continuous and faithful service to Bedford County. We hope you will join us in celebrating this significant bicentennial with the parish family. St. Thomas the Apostle, serving Bedford County since 1816. Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Congressman Schuster, there hasn't been a minute when I haven't turned on the radio or television here in Bedford County and I haven't heard the word ISIS or ISIL. I think to the average citizen, this is an outrage. We cannot, for the life of us, understand why this thing is being allowed to grow. They've used all the historical analogies from the Munich agreements and prior to World War II and all this other stuff, but the fact that it remains is that we have this evil force running around South Asia and the Mideast, and we sit here and say, well, it's no big deal, JV team, they're not going to come here, it just happens in Syria, blah, blah, blah. And the whole thing has directly affected the campaign for president 2016.
Right.
So you're in the Congress, you see all this stuff, you probably get classified information. What the devil's going on? Why can't we get our arms around this?
Well, I serve on the Armed Services Committee, so I do get to see much of this classified information, and we've been seeing it for over 3 years now, and this really it needs to be laid at the feet of the President of the United States. You know, when he said to Syria, the Syrians over 3 years ago, drew that red line in the sand, if he used chemical weapons that we would act, and then they did it, and we didn't do anything. It encouraged bad people around the world to act because they knew the United States, the President of the United States, wasn't willing to act. And he is the commander-in-chief. He's the head of our foreign policy. He's the head of our armed forces. He did not act. And so what happened after that is Putin starts to do the things he's doing. Other countries, Iran, we cut a deal with Iran on the nuclear weapons, which is a bad deal. It was a terrible deal, giving them access to hundreds of billions of dollars to re-establish and rebuild its military and intelligence service. This president just is very naive about the evil that's in the world. And the fact that he won't call what's happening radical Islam is just wrong. That's where it's coming from. It doesn't mean that all Muslims are bad, but there's an element that's radical Islam, and they're terrorists. They operate that way, and we have to take a firm stand against them.
Well, I just think the whole thing is tied together. The ISIS disaster, Guantanamo, the way we're treated by other nations.
Right.
I mean, this is a gigantic world power, and we're making concessions now to Iran through our Secretary of State.
Sure.
And in the news this week, I mean, this place isn't even as big as Texas.
Right.
You know, it's like this upside down world. I mean, what do you hear about this when you're in Washington? I mean, I'm incredulous because I can't believe that 400 plus members of Congress and 100 senators don't have the same reactions, or do they?
No, we don't. We all come from different places, but there are enough of us that we passed in the House a bill to put a pause or a stop to allowing Syrian and Iraqi refugees in this country until we get the FBI director, the DHS secretary, and the head of national intelligence to all agree that the system is not broke, and at least we can figure out how to vet these people. But they're coming from countries that don't have governments that function, so we can't get background information. And we had enough in the House, didn't have the 60 in the
Senate. John Kerry says he's working on a workaround so the Iranians could come anyway.
Well, look, this administration, they're very naive. The situation that's going on in the world, from the situation in the Middle East to the situation with Russia and what it's doing in the world, to look at what's happening in China. They're expanding into the South Pacific. Right. They want to expand their sphere of influence. This is all happening because this president has no backbone, because this president doesn't view the world in the terms of, you know, there's good people and there are bad people, and these bad people are doing things that the United States of America needs to stand up to them. And what we've lost now is our allies don't trust us. If we say we're going to do something and we don't do it, why would our allies step forward and say, we're with you, America, but they know, well, geez, they're not going to be there when the time comes, when the tough times come, America's not going to stand there. That's why it's so critical in this next election to elect a Republican president. And I'm not going to say who I'm for, because I could be for a lot of those folks up there. I want a strong commander-in-chief. The number one responsibility of the federal government, number one, bar anything else, is to make sure this country is secure. And we've got to have somebody that who has the strength, the toughness to be able to tell our enemies, you know, we're not going to tolerate this, and if something happens, that we go and take care of business. Our response to ISIS is not strong enough.
When I was a kid, they had an incident in the same place that these Chinese are building these islands. It was two islands mm-hmm. off of Taiwan called Kimoi and Matsu. And I'm old, so I remember this stuff. And over these crappy little islands, we damn near went to war.
Right.
Eisenhower sent the 7th Fleet out there. We fly two B-52s over these islands last week, and the first thing we do is apologize.
Right.
So that's what I mean when I say it's upside down.
It absolutely is upside down. And we got to make it right side up, and that's by getting a new president next November. You had Ronald Reagan do the same thing when the Libyans said we couldn't go fly into their airspace, in which is a bay. I can't remember what the bay was in Libya. He flew in. He said,
right.
No, that's not the international law. So they went in, they got in a little bit of a firefight, and America demonstrated that we'll live by international law. Everybody else has to. And the Chinese right now are not living within international law. And what they're doing is building these, what are basically outcroppings from the ocean. They're building artificial islands and saying, this is right. our land. And the Vietnamese and the Filipinos and the Japanese and the Koreans are all very worried about it. And I don't think we're doing enough to stop them. Not that we have to go to war with China, but we need to make very, very strong and very, very clear, this is not acceptable.
Is there any movement at all in Congress, especially among the Democratic members, that maybe this thing really is going a little south and maybe they're starting to rethink about the leadership of their own president? I mean, have you felt any of that at all?
Well, there's the members on the Armed Service Committee, which I serve, be considered the hawks of the Democratic Party. I think they've seen some of that, but there aren't enough of them. In the Republican Party, you know, we've been working very hard and pushing very hard to do more with our military, to have a coherent plan. And of course, in the NDAA, which is National Defense Reauthorization Bill that we passed this year, Republicans made it known. I pushed very hard to make sure that this administration in the bill says you have to have a comprehensive plan to deal with ISIL, to deal with the Middle East problem. They still haven't done it. This president, I think I just heard him the other day, he's blaming the media. And they haven't communicated well enough. He's been saying that for the last 6 years. He hasn't communicated well enough. Well, who he hasn't communicated well enough is with our enemies. And when he says something, he should do something. And his actions should follow his words. And if we hit him hard, all of a sudden they're going to understand that we mean business. And we have not done that. And that's why they're out there in the world doing whatever they damn well please.
See, what worries me is if something goes off in a mall in Altoona or Johnstown, mm-hmm. or even King of Prussia, for goodness right. sake.
Or how about San Bernardino,
or
California?
San Bernardino, but I mean something literally went off as a result of terrorism. Then all the people you're talking about, we become hawks tomorrow, which is what always happens.
Right.
And I don't want that to have to happen in order to get our tail in gear here.
Well, it's happened already. San right. Bernardino was right. the wake up. You know, we saw France, and then we saw San Bernardino, which was obviously right. inspired by ISIS. And God forbid, but we may end up another event.
We already know through our own FBI that we have cells
sure,
operating in this
absolutely.
Country. And the president's going, well, we have to be nice to them and we don't want to be racist about Muslims and stuff.
Well, I think what you've already seen is the number one issue in the polls today are national security because of what's happening.
Our guest is Congressman Bill Schuster. We're here in Bedford County speaking to Congressman Schuster. He's been very kind to come over and visit us. He always does. And one final thing I want to go over with you, it is related to this, and that is the base at Guantanamo. It has really been a big issue, but not for many people. It's very simple. You have terrorists, you put them in jail, and you do it in Cuba. So what part of this do they say you can't understand? And now the administration wants to close it.
Right.
What are they going to do with these people? Are they going to put them in a jail in Harrisburg, or where are they planning to put
them? Well,
these
they've already moved some of them to some of our supermax facilities around the country. I don't know exactly where they want to put them, but this president, you know, he's hell-bent on closing this down. I think it's wrong. I visited Guantanamo Bay this year back in February, and the people that are there are the baddest of the bad. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's there. He's the mastermind of the 9/11. These people are just bad people, and they deserve to be in a prison that keeps all of us safe and away from all of us. And Guantanamo is a perfectly fine installation where they should stay. Unfortunately, this president, you know, the five of those folks he traded with Mr. Bo Bergdahl, the traitor, the person that walked off his base, cost lives. He made a trade for that individual for five of these. Those folks they're telling me that some of them have already been back on the battlefield, and we found that over a third of 50%, depending on what you look at, go back onto the battlefield. So we don't need to do that. In fact, I just dropped a letter. The military just came out with a regulation that said women guards couldn't handle the prisoners because of their religious beliefs. Well, that's just a bunch of crap. I mean, these people, I'm sure.
Talk about the inmates really silent.
Exactly. if they want to pray, I understand that. They can pray. Right. But to tell us how we operate a prison, because you know what? I'm pretty sure they could find it in their religion to say it's illegal for us to hold them prisoners under their religion. So what are we going to do, release them?
Yeah.
You know, if we have people there that are females that want to be there, that want to do that type of job, then they should be able to handle these. They are prisoners. They don't have a whole lot of civil rights, if any. Look, their treatment should be fair. They should be allowed to practice their religion, but they shouldn't dictate to us how we operate that prison down there.
I know they have better medical care than I do.
Yeah, I'm sure they again, as far as actually when we were down there in February, a few of them that had gone to a supermax prison in Colorado, I think, sent back word through their lawyers that told the inmates there, you don't want to leave Guantanamo Bay. This prison in Colorado is much worse.
Yeah.
So you know, from a standpoint of a prison, I guess they got it as fairly good down there, or better than they should.
Well, you've been a treat as always. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to
thank
talk
you,
to
Lloyd.
Us. Have I missed anything here?
No, I just want to wish the folks a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. It's, you know, this time of giving, we ought to all, you know, look at our neighbors and our friends and make sure we're doing the right thing to help others.
I do have one more question.
Sure.
I forgot to ask you. Since you serve on armed forces and all these important committees, you've got to come in contact from time to time, I would hope, with the administration, the White House, your staff, or whatever. I guess, as a citizen, this is what Trump is getting into. We don't understand why these people don't hear the same words that we hear. If you tell me the administration doesn't believe that it's more important for our defense than the human rights of a prisoner in Guantanamo, why can't they hear this? What is in their way? That's the thing
It's
nobody understands.
President Barack Obama doesn't believe those things. He has taken intelligence, and they've spun it to their purposes. We just have now former Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel saying, he said all the time, we don't have a strategy. That's why they got rid of him.
Right.
And that's what they do. He's the President of the United States. Those people serve at his pleasure. And I'm certain that Secretary Ash Carr, who's been in the defense world for a number of years, it's got to be very, very difficult for him. But hey, he's serving at the pleasure of this president. Right. But they don't, and this president doesn't get it. He just doesn't get that the world is a dangerous place. It's not America's fault. that these folks are doing what they're doing, because this is one great nation that tries for years and demonstrated it to free people, to help people live a better life, and we're not going to tolerate people threatening us and committing acts of terror against our people or our friends.
Thanks for taking the time to talk.
Thank you, Lori. Appreciate it greatly. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.